It's Thursday, August 31st. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by Toyota. It is a pristine day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that, it is the one and only Chris Harris of the Harris Football Show. In a real reversal of roles here, buddy. I go on your show like all the time, and now you are finally on my show. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. It's also August 30th. Not August 31st. That's tomorrow. But I realize from your time on my show today, tomorrow, that's all sort of relative for you. You have a hard time with that.
Chris, this podcast will be posted on August 31st.
Oh, I mean,
yes, as we are literally talking, it is August. No, keep this in here, though, because for people that do listen to us together on your show, that will actually, that will hit really good. Okay. No, but yes, it is today and it's or yesterday, whenever we are.
It's coming out on Thursday. Whatever. My mistake. I didn't realize.
You really took that chance to just dunk on me here, which I appreciate. But Chris, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you. You know, we just drafted together in the Eckler's Invitational.
Right.
I thought I had a fine draft. Whatever. The highlight of it was me taking Austin fourth overall. You took Christian McCaffrey first overall, buddy. That was great. I appreciate you doing that. How'd you feel about your team?
Yeah. Did Eckler did he shed one single tear when I didn't take him first and took a different running back? Was he mad?
No, he was more. We had a lot more fun that I ended up drafting him. I told the story on the podcast that oh, look, when, you know, I figured out that I had the fourth overall pick, I was like, oh, you know what? I mean, I got to do this. Just even I think you ended up being the right take regardless, just because you went McCaffrey and then Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase went right after. I mean, it's probably the right pick to take Eckler there anyways. But I mean, for the content, it's just going to be great. You know, he's playing me during Chiefs week. I mean, he needs to bring his A game anyways. So I know he loves McCaffrey and is a big fan of his game. So I think he kind of gets it. But, maybe he'll just take it to you a little extra hard when you guys play this year that, you know, he'll feel that way.
I thought, I mean, you had to have talked to him already about him taking Jacobs Adams at the turn.
Yes. Yes.
I guess you're expecting your defense to suck those 2 weeks when you play the Raiders. Cool. Good. Great. And full confidence. Let's go. Let's get the over on the Chargers.
Yeah, fair point. I thought it was funny just that, we tell people this, right? That don't just get drafted in within your emotions, right? You know, don't, you're an Eagles fan. Don't be taking a bunch of Eagles or whatever. So that was a real unemotional draft. But I thought it was very, very good for you to be in this. I'm glad we're able to do it. And I'm more excited that you're here on the show today. We do have to talk probably the biggest news in the football landscape, which of course dropped after we recorded our podcast yesterday, or should I say
Tuesday,
yeah. Yesterday, whatever. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about here. You people listening have no idea. Anyways, NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reported, of course, that there was no trade was close for Jonathan Taylor yesterday, and the Colts eventually put him on the PUP list. That means he's going to miss at least 4 games. Chris, there was a couple other interesting things that we found out today on Wednesday that the Packers were the other mystery team, was the mystery team along with the Dolphins that were talking to Indianapolis, according to Stephen Holder of ESPN, who's been all over this. I think the Packers thing is mildly interesting. Of course, the Dolphins, we figured were going to be in this discussion. Barry Jackson also confirmed through a Dolphins person that, as reported by the Indy media, the Colts made wild requests from Miami, including Jalen Waddle plus a little extra. So it's amazing that Jim Irsay says the NFL can just go on without Jonathan Taylor. Who cares? But also let me get one of the most promising young receivers plus a little extra back in a trade package. It really makes no sense. But where it stands now, nonsense aside, Taylor's going to miss at least again, I keep saying at least the first 4 games. Is there any point in a draft, Chris, where you're like, okay, I feel comfortable taking Jonathan Taylor?
Yeah. If I get to the 7th round, that's where I put him. After this news came out, if I get to the 7th round, sure, because wrongly, my logic through all of this is usually players play because they like getting paid. And so they storm, you know, Josh Jacobs storms around, but eventually J.K. Dobbins, T.J. Hockenson, you know, eventually they play. But occasionally now we see that some don't. But there are CBA parts to this where he legitimately could be fined on a per game basis, I think after week 6 or something. So the max number of games we'd expect him to miss before, unless he's willing to just throw away hundreds of thousands of dollars every single week. I think he's still going to play this year. So yes, I think I could see taking him only as a bench player. You know, I can't do it with any sense as a starter. But what about you? I mean, the way you asked it made me think that maybe you don't want him at all.
I mean, I think that if you, and because I'm kind of with you, I said like end of six, early seventh when I did the write-up for this. You know, I put him around guys in my rankings that I honestly wasn't drafting very much of anyways. I put him around guys like Cam Akers and James Conner. You know, it, typically when you get to that, again, late six, early seventh, where those guys sort of kind of go depending on your format, I'm typically taking kind of those potential breakout receivers there, you know, the Jahan Dotson's types, the George Pickens types. So I haven't really found myself plucking from that group of running backs anyways. I just feel like if you and I are sitting here saying late six, early seventh, that's kind of the range to take him. There's probably going to be somebody else that wants him more than that anyways. So I hope that I'm not faced with him being, and even sometimes, you know, you do this right with rankings and tiers and cheat sheets. You sit there and you're like, okay, I've crossed off all these names and some after this guy, but I still just don't want to do it. And I just have this bad, like just this much bad vibes. It's tough to make this pick.
Yeah. Boy, my money gets rid of bad vibes in the NFL. I mean, they're all just, the owners are such, Jim Irsay is such a moron. Like, you know, at some point he's going to play, and maybe it's, you know, the trade deadline will probably be important date. Like you're worthless as a player, and yet I want Jalen Waddle plus for you. It's just like it's so dumb. And the larger collusion point here just seems so much clearer. And there's no referee that the players can appeal to, because the referee is Roger Goodell, who is a little puppet, you know. But like the Lamar Jackson thing this winter, a former very recent league MVP getting no restricted free agent contract offers, none.
Yeah.
And now this, where maybe nobody's making a call saying, you know, if you're out of the club, if you give Jonathan Taylor a real contract. But like, I think it's implied and it's horrible. And it's just another reason why, you know, antitrust exemptions are horrible and sports are owned by bad people. And like, I just hate it all. It's just not fun. Like the whole point of this is supposed to be fun, and this is just not fun.
No, it's not fun. And like, okay, he's on the PUP list when he says he never reported a back injury, you know, but he's the ankle stuff. All this stuff is so nonsense. And almost kind of like, in a way, I want my fantasy season to be fun. I want my, I want to enjoy this. I don't want to sit here and like by week five, I'm starting to stress like, all right, are they going to take him off the PUP list? Are they like, I don't even want to deal with that anxiety. And frankly, if you all out there are listening and you don't want to deal with it, I kind of validate that, because as Chris says, this is supposed to be fun. I don't want to have to live and die by freaking Jim Irsay's Twitter feed when we get to week five, like giving us an update about, you know, what classic rock guitar he's selling or orca whales he's bringing in, as opposed to like, is his star running back going to play? Sticking in Indianapolis, though, because we're not going to get Jonathan Taylor for four games.
Yeah.
I bet you're going to be able to tell how I feel about it by the way I asked you this question. Is there any running back here that you're interested or advising people to draft in this four game absence of Jonathan Taylor in a theoretical rushing ecosystem that we think should be pretty good?
Yeah, his name is Kareem Hunt. He's not, as of our recording, it could be a joke that doesn't wear well if he actually signs there. But as of our recording, he has not signed there. You know, the problem is that I've seen Zach Moss play and I've seen Deion Jackson play, and they're just slappies. They're just guys. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen Evan Hull play. So when I re-ranked these Colts running backs, I did put Evan Hull the highest. It didn't hurt that everybody who understands the college game better than I do and watched a lot of college tape said, I mean, our mutual buddy Matt Waldman said that he thought Evan Hull was borderline like the best receiving back in the entire NFL draft this past year. That could have made him useful anyway, even if Jonathan Taylor stuck around. I think Hull is the first one I probably take the stab at, but it's for the dumbest of reasons. It's because I don't know, he can't play yet, whereas the other two guys I do.
Yeah.
Could we get out of week one and Zach Moss got all the work and suddenly everyone's like, there's your number one waiver ad, you need to be starting week two? Okay. Except for, I just don't think it's going to go well, because I just don't think he's very good.
Yeah. Even last year, right, he gets some opportunity and has a couple of like, you know, 80 yard games and stuff like that, but that's the most you're going to get out of it. You know, there's not a ceiling there to chase. And there should have been outstanding questions about Jonathan Taylor's fantasy value in this offense, right? Because we know Taylor's a fantastic running back when he's healthy, when he's right and all that. But how many passes is he going to catch with Anthony Richardson? Probably by the point he gets to that in the progression, he's going to take off scrambling. How many touchdowns is he going to score? You know, because Anthony Richardson is going to be vulturing those touchdowns away at the goal line. Now we're asking those probably fair questions about like Zach Moss. Yeah, it's not a very appealing situation to me. So I've been typically moving away from it. You mentioned the Dolphins running backs before we got started here recording. And obviously there's some fallout here. You said nobody wants to take a stand on the Dolphins running backs and the Eagles running backs. We'll put a pin in the Eagles one because we're going to talk about that when we get to the main section of the show today. But on the Dolphins here, since, again, now Taylor's not going to be playing there, maybe he gets traded by the trade deadline, whatever. But for now, these Dolphins running backs, Jeff Wilson, Raheem Mostert, Devin Achane, they release Myles Gaskin. He signs with the Minnesota Vikings as a depth guy there. What's your stand on these running backs, Chris?
I mean, it isn't so much that I just think they're going like several rounds later than they should. The veterans, Achane, I'm not that interested in. He's smaller for me and already hurt. And like, I'm going to let somebody else take a chance there. But between Wilson and Mostert, I wind up with either one of them and sometimes both on teams because like, I don't think Raheem Mostert's good and he's also old. So he's so injury prone. I tend to think he won't last, but still, so what? Did you know he was a track star? No one ever talks about that in the broadcast that he was a former track star. Like he's fast. He'll make a big play here and there. I don't really want to rely on him to pick the right hole or to not bounce everything outside. It's kind of what he does. I like Jeff Wilson kind of a lot as a player. He's, for what he is, he's not fast, but he's like pretty shifty. He's very contact balanced and always goes where he's supposed to go. And like, he's a very good player. If I was picking one between the two of them, I think I would pick Wilson. But my point about ADP is, you know, granted ADP as a notion is now much more theoretical than real because it's different everywhere you look, but mostly It feels like both of those Dolphins running backs either don't go in drafts or they go in the 13th round. And I don't actually know the right answer, but I don't think the 13th round is right, given that there's nobody else, you know, like given that these are two professional running backs who've had fantasy impact in the past, who we know can be big league players. They're either fine or better than fine. And we're like, take Deuce Vaughn over them. You know, I just go, oh, okay. I think I'd rather take the Dolphins guys.
Yeah, you know, consensus ADP right now, of course, these guys are going back to back, just like you said, running back 46 for Jeff Wilson, running back 47 for Raheem Mostert. I, you know, if you look at my tiers, at least have a stand that I think from a tier perspective, Jeff Wilson is a higher than Raheem Mostert because, I mean, he's been on your Super Deep Sleeper show that we've done before. You really Correct. Like Jeff Wilson as the player. I think he is a good running back. I think their comfort with him atop the depth chart is a reason that they don't go, you know, out cave to whatever. I mean, they're never trading Jalen Waddle to the damn Colts for Jonathan Taylor, but it's a reason they haven't gone like after Dalvin Cook and match the Jets offer to him. Right. Cause I think they're comfortable with this guy. And I think he's comfortable in this offense because he's just a good football player. So I think Jeff Wilson, especially if you kick running back down the can a little bit, you know, you're one of these hero RB teams, you're one of these zero RB teams, you get to like the, like you said, the super last rounds, anything like, even like I think as a 10th round pick, 9th round pick, he's a perfectly fine stab there. I mean, there are guys going ahead of him like that need an injury to hit. Elijah Mitchell needs an injury to hit. Ezekiel Elliott, I mean, is he even going to hit if there is an injury? Achane still goes the highest among this backfield. Like you said, small rookie already injured and was buried on the depth chart a little bit before he was injured. Tyler Allgeier needs an injury to hit. Jaylen Warren needs an injury to hit. I think Jeff Wilson probably not going to hit as big as Jaylen Warren would theoretically if Najee Harris ever got hurt. But I mean, come on, he's going to give you bankable production in those first, you know, handful of games and maybe throughout the course of the season.
Yep. You nailed it exactly right. It's just weird. It seems like a weird market inefficiency as though the market just been waiting for them to add someone else. Like, let's just keep these guys where they would be if Dalvin Cook signs here, and then Dalvin Cook never signs and they forget, the market forgets to elevate them back to where they're supposed to go. It just seems like, I get it that there's two of them. They're both kind of oft injured. Wilson's definitely much more in his prime though. But like, again, totally. If somebody told me in a full PPR, they would rather have Mostert. I'm actually okay with that too. Like, I think there's going to be usable times for those players, and you're definitely not drafting the starters.
I think the moral of the story is just take your shots on the, this is a backfield that's so cheap. That's so, I think, crucial to the success of the Dolphins season. I don't know about you, Chris, but I've kind of said on this podcast that we talk about, like, okay, what if the Dolphins just get their, if the quarterback's healthy, if Tua's out there, this offense is going to be one of the best offenses in the NFL. And I think it probably will be, but we also have to remember there was a stretch of games before Tua's second concussion when defenses started punching back, when defenses started adjusting to that RPO heavy middle of the field passing offense. And there was the Chargers game, there's the 49ers game, but the Bills game is when they kind of sort of got back on track, and they kind of sort of got back on track by running the ball effectively. I think they need to run the ball effectively this year to have that successful counterpunch to the defense's adjustment. So if anything, my skepticism about the passing game should lead you to even more, not that I'm skeptical about the passing game, but just like, I'm not all the way in line with everybody else, right? Where I think it's just going to be set it and forget it, go. I think they need a counterpunch. I think Jeff Wilson could be a big part of that counterpunch.
Yeah, like, if you watch how defenses have adjusted to mobile quarterbacks and RPOs, it's so obvious. The first thing, the layperson can watch an NFL game and watch play action or watch an RPO of some kind and watch the linebackers. They don't move anymore.
Yeah.
They mostly don't bite on play action anymore. They mostly stand there in zone and wait for the next move. And if it's a handoff, they go, oh crap. And then they run forward and they try to tackle. Like, that's how linebackers are being coached now. So you're 100% right. I don't think too many offenses are going to be able to, as we go forward here, are going to be able to just go RPO without some level of effective running game, because defenses just don't fall. Like, watch defenses defend Atlanta last year. At some point they were like, yeah, go ahead. Like, yeah, go ahead. Like, we're just going to stand here. You go ahead and see if you can run it. And, you know, eventually Tyler Allgeier did run some, but it's why those receivers, especially Kyle Pitts, just wasn't getting open.
Exactly. Yeah. Those linebackers just sticking static. It's a great point in how defenses continue to adjust there. All right. That does it for news and notes. We're going to take a quick break. After we come back, we continue Cram Week on the podcast by diving into the final Yahoo staff mock draft. And we're going to have a conversation on what Chris and me a little bit thinks consensus rankings have gotten wrong this year. All right, we're back. Yahoo, we did a final mock draft. Chris, I sent you the results of this mock draft. Rather ridiculously, I got another C minus from the very unfair, very unjust Yahoo draft grades. Chris Eckler thought because he got himself an A minus in the draft, he's going to have a good team. I got to tell you, you know, I work for Yahoo and all that, so I say this with all seriousness considered, just because that means nothing. So it means nothing. I get a C minus. I feel better about my team. Okay. I feel better that I got myself an A minus.
I got an A plus in the Eckler draft. I got an A plus.
Well, then you're screwed, pal. I hate to tell you, but that if you might as well pack it in now. It's over for you if you get an A plus. First things first about this mock draft, you know, Travis Kelce, 1.6. You know, I sent you the boards, and I know it's hard to sit here and be like, all right, I wasn't a part of this mock draft, but if I was like, if anybody can come in here and slam a different draft that he wasn't a part of, it's definitely Chris Harris. He's the man for the job. Any overall thoughts before we get into specific stuff about just kind of this draft or the way things have played out like throughout the course of your drafting this year?
Oh, I mean, I think I just am not into Kelce as a first rounder. You pointed it out. I think, I probably said it to you on my show. Of course it can work out, but it just feels like if I'm choosing between him and a wide receiver who is obviously one of the two or three or four best receivers, I'm essentially drafting Kelce to pray that as a 34-year-old, he can do exactly what I know Tyreek Hill is going to do if he's safe or if he's healthy, if Stephon Diggs is going to do if he's healthy. And I know there's like a value advantage to have an advantage at that position, but wide receiver is so freaking shallow these days for like what you can actually count on that I'm really happy to have the Tyreek Hill or Stephon Diggs advantage over the average receiver as I am Kelce over the average tight end, especially when I add in the fact that a number that I use on my show a lot. Maybe it'll wind up biting me in the tush, but 34-year-old tight ends this millennium, how many of them have a 1,000-yard receiving season, Matt?
Zero.
It's zero. How many of them have double-digit touchdown receiving seasons? It's one. It was Antonio Gates, I think 2014. We're asking a lot. He's a different kind of cat, but like the cliff is coming and it's going to come quick and might not be this year, but it's going to come. So I wouldn't take him. I don't tend to take Bijan in the first round either. I'm impressed though that he lasted to 11 in this draft because he doesn't normally last that long. It's nothing against Bijan. It's just sight unseen. Why am I drafting a kid who's never done anything in the league to hopefully get to the point that, I don't know, name him Nick Chubb is definitely going to do, or Saquon Barkley is definitely going to do. Like, I get it. If you get the Bijan doing the Saquon rookie year, you go, ha, I did it. But it's just like, if you know, we both play poker. Like, if you're going to play poker, you can draw to an inside straight. You can, you know, hit on 18, as they say, but it's just not the percent play. So I tend not to take Bijan in the first round. I understand what could happen. I understand that that could go really well. I don't know. Did you have others? But that was my first round thoughts. Did you have other specific thoughts about how it went that you want to ask me?
Yeah. So I think with your Bijan thing, that was actually one that I had in the what consensus rankings gets wrong section. So we'll just do it now.
Sure.
You have him in PPR formats as your 17th overall player. And as you mentioned, he goes considerably higher than that. I actually named him as the guy I'm drafting around in the first round. I had the 10th. This is a 10 team.
Oh, this is 10.
This is a 10 team half PPR format. So I was taking on the turn there. I had the 10th overall pick. So I went back to back. If Bijan had made it to me there, he went the 9th pick right before me. I would have kind of sort of thought about it. Mm-hmm. I probably would have ended up going with the guy that I went with and Stephon Diggs anyways, just because I think it's not even so much. And I agree with you that if you weigh Bijan against some of these other running backs like Nick Chubb, I like more. Nick Chubb did go ahead of Bijan Robinson in this draft. I think that's correct. I think Derrick Henry, I like a slight more than Bijan Robinson. But I probably wouldn't have thought about Derrick Henry at the 10th pick. I just like those receivers that go there so much more. Even the guys that go after, I went Diggs and Garrett Wilson. Davante Adams goes right after CeeDee Lamb, AJ Brown. I'm probably taking almost any of those guys ahead of Bijan Robinson, except maybe Garrett Wilson. And maybe Davante Adams. But yeah, so I share your sort of not skepticism about Bijan Robinson, the player. I do have concerns about, are they going to mix in Tyler Allgeier, who had a nice rookie year? What's the offensive environment like in Atlanta overall? How many touchdowns is this team going to score? How good is Desmond Ridder? There are a lot of questions beyond just the fact that, hey, Bijan Robinson is really, really good at football that I think you have to ask about him as a player.
For sure. It's just not, it's sight unseen. It's not the same thing as Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because I think we all suspect that Bijan is a lot better prospect than Edwards-Helaire was. And a lot of CEH's appeal was, oh my God, he landed on the Chiefs. But there's some overlap to this sight unseen making CEH the 8th pick in a draft, right? We don't really know what these players are, as much as we convince ourselves that we do know what these players are when they're coming in. I suspect Bijan's really, really good. I also was told Najee Harris is really, really good, and he's not. So like,
yeah,
there is,
he's fine. Yeah,
he's fine, but he's not really, really good. So like, there's some percent chance. And if you want to tell me it's 2%, I think that's whistling past the graveyard, but maybe it's 2%, maybe it's 10%, or maybe it's 25% chance that Bijan just isn't a generational player the way everybody's automatically decided that he is. That has to be baked into the expected value of the first year around. And it's not to say that he wouldn't be fun if he was great, and it wouldn't be fun to have him if it were like a little extra fun if he did a 2,000 yard season and you were the one who took the chance on him. It is fine. It's fun. It's just not the way I play fantasy. Like, I try to sort of divorce myself from the emotion of it a little bit and just say, okay, what's the pick that gives me the best chance to win? What's my highest EV pick? And I don't think it's a rookie running back in the first round ahead of Saquon Barkley, the player who, if Bijan has a unbelievably spectacular, great year,
right,
he could do a Saquon Barkley year that I know Barkley's going to do if he stays healthy.
Yeah, that's a great point, that you're hoping he's Saquon Barkley and Saquon Barkley goes later than him. I also think, too, beyond the assumption of just how good the player Bijan Robinson is, I think the big assumption that fantasy GMs are making, which I think is incorrect, is that the Falcons love to run the football. They ran the football more than anybody else last year, and they drafted this guy eighth overall. They're going to just run it even more, and I think that is incorrect based on the other players on the roster. So that's another assumption. You have to make two assumptions there, which is rather risky to make. Moving on later in the draft, I think the second round is what it is. The third round is interesting, Chris, because we get two quarterbacks that go off the board here. Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes. Where are you personally this year targeting quarterbacks? Because I have said that everything you do this year has to start at, do you make that decision to go for one of these elite guys? Josh Allen makes it to the fourth round in this draft. Or are you going to wait? Are you going to take one of the middle tier guys? Where have you sort of been picking your spots at quarterback this year?
Other years, when you and I have had this conversation, we've had these conversations for like a decade, the two of us. I think I'm almost always the guy who says, you know what? It's just too expensive. I'm just not going to pay for the elite quarterbacks because I want to take as many shots as I can at the scarce positions in a single quarterback league. And this year I'm finding that I'm bending a little bit, and it's really not related to quarterback at all. It's the sameness from rounds 3 to 7, say, of running back and wide receiver. You're not finding massive differences. Everyone's going to have a favorite. If you think of rounds 3 through 7 consisting of, you know, whatever, 48, 50 players, whatever it is, everyone's going to go, sure, in that group, I like this guy better than these other three guys. But to like really like pound the table and say, you're crazy if you don't like this guy, like they're all, it's the nature of the NFL. It's what the NFL has turned into. There are very few unsplit backfields. Even the really good running backs all have second running backs that are obnoxious and annoying and you worry. And then every team runs 11 personnel. Every team's got three receivers on the field. The number of dudes who are going to really differentiate themselves, that at least from my perspective, looking at it right now, is just not, it's 9 guys or something. Like after that, I go, okay, cool. I could see what could go right. But also, T. Higgins has Ja'Marr Chase right there. You know, there's a whole bunch of guys that are same seeming, which brings me back to quarterback. And it makes me go, gosh, there is a point where I'm willing to pay for a quarterback who does differentiate himself from the baseline, the QB9, the baseline guy. And I have found, I mean, 10-team drafts a little different. 10-team, I do the one, this most recent mock. You can play a little star ball in 10-team leagues. I'm fine. Like, going at the end of the third round of a 10-team league is probably a little too rich for my blood, but I'm not mad at it because there's so many, you know, it's not a deep league. You're going to have a lot of solutions available to you. But like in 12-team leagues, when I'm picking early, for example, in the Eckler league that we did over the weekend, I picked one. And by the time it gets back to you at 24, 25, what the reason I took McCaffrey is because I don't want my RB1 to be, Travis Etienne. And so that's why I didn't go Jefferson at 1. I go McCaffrey. And then I get to 24, 25 and it's like, okay, cool. What other running back do I really want here who's so much different than I'm going to get at the turn at 4 or 5? I don't think any. So, you know, in that league, I took Metcalf and then I took Josh Allen. He was the third quarterback taken. If I'm picking early like that, I'm often getting a quarterback. If I'm picking late, the next day, actually, I did a CBS draft with those guys, and I picked 12th. And when it got to my third and fourth round picks, the three best quarterbacks, actually four, Lamar was also gone. They were gone. And I played it much more like I typically play it. This was a really long answer, but it was my way of saying, it's for me been very draft position dependent, but if I'm earlier in drafts, I'm way likelier to take one of those shots on, for me, one of those three quarterbacks.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a great answer because sometimes when you're where you draft just ends up predetermining your future. And again, I think the rest of your roster is going to look drastically different based on the decision that you make at quarterback, whether you take one early or whether you take one late. And I think for people going into their drafts this weekend, it's like, okay, well, I have an early pick. And yeah, I picked fourth overall in the Eckler League, which is a 14-team league. So it's much different than this 10-team mock draft that we just did.
Right.
It got back to me in the second round, and I was like, you know what? Hurts. I'm just taking Jalen Hurts here because listen, number one, I think he's my QB1. I think he's got we just know who he is as a player. And I like him a lot better than some of these receivers I'm staring at, right? Some of these, and I got Calvin Ridley in the third round, which I felt good about in a 14 team league, even though it is generally aggressive based on ADP to take Calvin Ridley that high. But regardless, look, you sacrifice a little bit at one position to gain a bit at the other. And I definitely, in a 14 team league, I don't want to be messing around with like, all right, I'm platooning Anthony Richardson and Brock Purdy or something like that. Okay, I'm just trying to just set it and forget it here with Jalen Hurts in that situation. So I'm with you that it does kind of depend on, are you early, are you late? In this specific draft in the 10 team league, just going back with Hurts and Mahomes go off second and third second pick and third pick of the third round. The guys that go after them, Devonta Smith, love him as a player, probably needs an injury to somebody else to reach maximum upside. Jonathan Taylor, obviously this was done before the four, you know, whatever, doesn't matter. Calvin Ridley, again, love Calvin Ridley, but you know, there are some question marks there. Joe Mixon, is Joe Mixon winning you your league this year? T. Higgins, like you said, Jamar Chase problem, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and eventually a JSN problem. I took ETN at the bottom of the third round, and he is my RB1, so thanks for that little slide there. But I think when you weigh those guys and the potential league-winning difference that they bring to you, like there's no problem for Mahomes, there's no problem for Hurts. I think everybody else, there's like a problem that needs to be solved.
Yeah, and I in the league where I picked 12, and you were picking 10, the point is the same. It's the end of the draft instead of the beginning of the draft. It's not so much that there are better options available in rounds 3 and 4. There aren't, but it's that probably the guys that you would want to take to create the differentiator are not there. You know, you had the choice. Right. I'm actually curious. You had the choice of Josh Allen at the beginning of 4, and he could have been a pick for me there. I wouldn't say I'm like looking at it and saying that's crazy that you passed Josh Allen there, because it's not. And 10 team league's very different. So you're just going to have a lot of ways to solve it at quarterback in a 10 team league. No question. But I wondered, when you took Stevenson, were you tempted by Allen? Because those are the three who I would conceivably wind up taking in the first 4 rounds.
Yes. I was definitely thinking long and hard about Josh Allen. I think he's just got such a great setup, especially because I have Diggs, right? All last year, my best teams were Josh Allen, Stefon Diggs stacked teams. I wouldn't mind recreating it another year. I won't mind recreating it basically any year they play together, right? But I looked at the running back situation that I was faced with there with ETN or Stevenson. I went with ETN because, oh my God, I got him ranked one spot higher. Who gives a damn? And then I thought Stevenson again, just even in a 10-team league, you know, when it comes back to me here in the 5th round, the guys I'm going to be looking at are the players I just talked about, like Cam Akers, Javonte Williams. Some guys I like I like Madison a little bit, but we're starting to push it there, right? Miles Sanders, Breece Hall, Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones is okay, but I just knew I was not going to feel as good about the running backs that were going to be back there. So I went and doubled up at that position, basically.
Yeah, it makes some sense, but it's funny that, you know, the list of names that you just came up with, I can come up with a story that any of them suck this year, and I can come up with a story that any of them are pretty good this year. I don't think I can come up with a story that too many of them are like league winners this year, which speaks to that grossness from rounds 3 to round 7. It's feeling like, okay, I don't mind any of these guys, but do I really have to pick one and like kind of commit to him? Can I just like say they're all in a group together and I don't love any of them? Yeah.
And there is still that, and that is opportunity cost, right? If you're going to take Josh Allen there, you're passing up on ETN and Stevenson, who I think are in a different tier than even some of these other guys that go later, right? The Miles Sanders types and whatever. You know, I think there's a little bit of a difference between those two. And I mean, you're hemming and hawing over there, so disagree. But
they're the best of them. Stevenson was the best of them until Zeke signed, and actually, I did lose a little bit of luster for Stevenson, and now it feels like I'm a little behind the market on him. I don't think I'm ever taking him in the second round of a 12 team draft the way I was before Zeke signed there. ETN, yes. ETN is like, ETN for me is like the first running back. For me, it's something like Pollard, then ETN, and Pollard is like, I feel pretty safe. And then ETN, I go, you're the best of the next guys, but I'm a little scared. I have ETN all over the place, though. I'm ranked ahead. I have him ranked ahead of where usually ADP is. Yeah, but I still don't, in my gut, feel like it's perfect.
No, definitely not. Sometimes I sit here and, you know, Tank Bigsby, is he going to take goal line carries? How many passes is ETN going to catch? And then the other part of my brain is like, yo, he's a good player.
Yes.
I think he's a good player. He's a good player who's going to be the starting running back, probably get the majority to vast majority of the work in an offense that we all think is really good. Like, why are we freak, like some people, the general you, we, the royal we, why are we freaking out about Travis Etienne? Because they drafted a guy in Tank Bigsby who's, you know, who went in the third round. If Tank Bigsby was just like Tim Bigsby, would we be this concerned about Tank Bigsby? There's another part of me that thinks that way too.
Yeah. And if Deuce Vaughn wasn't dropping a deuce, what? The thing that I would say about Etienne and Pollard both is I actually think they're kind of similar. I've said this much on my show. The difference between a guy of that shape and ability and the true warrior, the true guys who we really trust at the position is the size isn't even a problem. Like, they're Dalvin Cook sized. You know, they're not tiny. They're okay. Neither one of them to me really makes their living on quickness, makes their living on really avoiding guys between the tackles the way the best running backs between the tackles do. That their best trait is that thing. They can get to the edge and then hit the gas and they're just gone. Their acceleration is super elite. And maybe there's a point at which both the Cowboys and the Jags say, you know, using these guys between the tackles 15 times a game is counterproductive and going to affect their ability to do that other thing they do better. So whoever it is, I don't know, Tank Bigsby from Tim Bigsby. I don't know any of them, but like another body to take some of the valuable stuff off of Etienne's plate because of just the nature of the guy. Whereas, you know, I mean, Jamal Charles, similar sized guy.
The grinder carries, right?
I mean, right. Jamal Charles, similar sized guy, but just the elite stop start. LeSean McCoy, similar sized guy. The elite stop start where you didn't have to worry that much because they were going to make three guys miss. They weren't going to take that many direct blows. Whereas when I watch Etienne and Pollard play, I'm not sure that's what they are.
Absolutely. I mean, shoot, Austin's been on this podcast begging for like a couple years now. Like, can some other running back in my backfield emerge so that he doesn't, like he said, his body feels way different after games now than it did when he was splitting work with Melvin Gordon. And there's still a way to make fantasy folks happy and the player happy and the team happy if with all of this working together. So yeah, I mean, it's a fair question, right? With Pollard and Etienne, and it does matter, right? Like the workload that these guys can put up does matter both from their stance and from a fantasy stance. So that's fair to mention. I want to circle back just on Ramondre because you're a Patriots fan.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, for the non YouTube folks, Chris literally like sticks his tongue out as I just said.
Yeah. I mean, I am, but they suck. But yes, I'm from the area. I'm a lifelong. Yes, I'm a diehard. It's been a rough 25 years. Yeah. It's been a rough. Yeah. It's been hard to be a Patriots fan. Yeah.
Been a rough 25 hours, maybe, when they don't like. By the way, you're worried about Zeke. Aren't they like the only two backs on the roster? My dude Kevin Harris gets cut. Ty Montgomery gets cut. Yeah. Pierre Strong traded. They also only have backup quarterbacks on the practice squad. That at least made me think like, oh well, those were some of the names we were worried about with Ramondre Stevens. And I know Zeke is there now, but I don't know.
Although I will say, you know, I have a lot of friends in the Patriots media and even the organization. JJ Nelson, we heard about him a while ago and everyone was like, come on, he's going to be great. And he's tiny. Apparently, like completely lit the world on fire in camp. And if you're looking for the new Kevin Falk, if you're looking for the new third down back, actually, I'm not drafting him. I'm not sure it's true, but they are all talking about JJ Nelson.
You mean JJ Nelson? Isn't it JJ Redick or something?
JJ, it's definitely not JJ Redick. Maybe Nelson is not the right name either. JJ Redick's a football player, a basketball player. Who am I thinking of?
Definitely not
JJ Taylor. JJ Taylor.
Yeah. JJ Nelson was JJ Nelson was the tiny Cardinals receiver who weighed like 150 pounds. Right, so right, I understand right. Tiny why you make
well, and believe me, JJ Taylor also tiny. I think 5'6", like teeny, yes. teeny. But anyway, don't draft JJ Nelson, JJ Redick. Don't draft JJ Taylor either based on this. But I'm just saying they do have another running back in the roster, even if I'm too dumb to remember his last name.
There you go. All right, let's move into what consensus rankings get wrong, Chris. We've already kind of sort of put one foot in this conversation with a few of the players, but I want to take it all the way back to the top. From an overall rankings perspective, Chris, you have CMC, Austin Eckler, Saquon Barkley in that order, depending on format, because you have standard and PPR. I appreciate you just not even breaking the middle here with the half PPR, which is the Yahoo standard. So those are your top three. You then, again, in a PPR format, go go with Justin Jefferson, Steph Diggs. I freaking love you for having Steph Diggs as your receiver too. Jamar Chase, Tyreek Hill, before you get back to Nick Chubb at the eighth overall player, who's obviously a running back. So my question to you, Chris, with three running backs in your top three, that's different from consensus generally, because typically the top five players are going to include definitely two, sometimes three receivers. Yeah. Has the industry as a whole gotten a little too wide receiver happy?
Yeah, I mean, probably yes. It reminds me of the Antonio Brown year. Remember, he was definitely the one, no question about it. And he had a good season, but it just wasn't good enough to justify taking him number one overall. There were running backs, the scarcer position. In the end, it is still the scarcer position. My default is still, if I'm at the very top of a draft, I would like to get the best advantage at the scarcest position. And that, for me, still is running back. You know, you can make the argument that the reason the receivers become more attractive in the first round, because receivers become a little more like running back, a lot more committees among, on a bunch of teams. We don't call them committees, right? We call it spread out targets. So I see the logic behind taking the advantage at wide receiver that some could argue is similar to the advantage that you get from the top running backs. It's just, to me, not quite there. You can muddle through with these committee receivers more than you can muddle through with the committee running backs. So I'm looking for an excuse to take a running back early still. I don't think it's like being buried in the old way of thinking. I just think this is a swing. Jonathan Taylor busts last year, and like the momentum starts to gather, like, hey, yeah, why do we have to take running backs? And we kind of lose the strategic sense of why we did that in the first place. No one's going to be like, you're not dumb for taking Justin Jefferson very early in a draft. He's really, really great. But I would take, you know, if you're playing standard, I would take Chubb first. Like, I feel that strongly about him. And if you're playing full PPR, true, I would take McCaffrey. So it's a philosophical difference. I don't think it's quite as egregious as the year that everybody decided Antonio Brown was the one because they somehow couldn't find a... I mean, I remember being at ESPN and having someone say that Michael Vick should be the one because he'd had a big year last year. You know, those felt like kind of hipster, you're falling into a trap. This doesn't feel as like silly as that, but I still would err on the side of running back if I could.
Yeah, there's just no question when you have that running back that can produce as a runner and a passer that way, or a pass catcher that way, it is still a uniquely unfair advantage. Now, Jefferson, obviously, I think we're all kind of chasing this like 20 touchdown season that Randy Moss had, right? You know, when he goes absolutely nuclear with your New England Patriots. I would love to, like, Jefferson scores 8 touchdowns and he still moonwalks past everybody else as the fantasy wide receiver one last year. Could he catch like 13, 14 this year and have that kind of year? That's why I typically go with him number one overall. And, you know, I am the lead lobbyist for big receiver, so there is that. but I totally like, for me, if I get the second pick, I am thinking that is where I'm thinking about McCaffrey over Jamar Chase, who Jamar Chase is a great player. I think he is the clear alpha in Cincinnati's passing game, but they still have T. Higgins. They still have Tyler Boyd. There's still ways that those targets can be distributed. You mentioned Nick Chubb. I do just want to, for people who are going to draft over the next few days, Nick Chubb has been steadily creeping up the boards. He was for a long time like a guy that you could get in the second round. Thanks to Andy Behrens at Yahoo, you're definitely not getting Nick Chubb in the second round because he's had him right.
Maybe me too.
I'm just saying from our default rankings perspective, okay. Andy has been smashing Nick Chubb up the board to the point that you can't get him in the second round. It's just not going to happen because even if some idiot misses your draft and you auto draft, that Nick Chubb's probably going to be your player thanks to Andy Behrens. But yeah, you have been high on Nick Chubb, and I want you to explain to people what makes this season so potentially special for a guy like Nick Chubb.
I don't know if I think it's so much this season. It's just a guy like Nick Chubb. He's the best running back in the league. As from a carrying the ball perspective, he's the best running back I see on tape right now. I don't think you're getting like a revelatory reception season. You could. There are a lot of receivers running back. Like, I don't think Josh Jacobs does anything special catching the ball. They just made the decision to throw him a bunch of swing passes. Nick Chubb could do that. It just hasn't been the offense at that point. And it's a good idea to take guys off the field and let someone else do something easy, like run out on 3rd and 8 and catch a negative 1 yard pass and then get your head knocked off and not have that be Nick Chubb. I'm all for that, frankly, but it does take away a little bit of his PPR glory. Again, in a standard league where you're not getting any points per reception, which there are still such leagues out there. I play in one for sure. he's my number one. I take Chubb before I take anybody else because I think he's such an advantage. He's such a special runner. And then, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I have to rely on Deshaun Watson. I don't have to rely. I don't care. This guy is absolutely great. He does everything. He mows people down. He breaks long touchdowns. He scores on the goal line. He's just the best running back in the league.
Yeah. And I think this could be a potentially special season for him if they spread the field out more with 11 personnel. He's always going to be the central figure of their offense, but there's no Kareem Hunt now. It's like Jerome Ford and Pierre Strong, who they just traded for. Like, I think this could be the year where he, even in a PPR format, is the number one overall player in fantasy. I'm with you on the Nick Chubb hype, although I don't have him quite ranked as high as you do. Maybe I need to revisit that. I mean, he's my running back three, though. So, yeah, once you get, like, for me, once McCaffrey and Eckler are off the board, regardless of format, I'm going with Nick Chubb there. So let's move to the receiver position. You have Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, and T. Higgins ahead of guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown and Garrett Wilson. I'm sure you're going to tell me there's not that big of a difference and there's really no strong reason, but consensus wise, those guys are more likely to be like, if somebody's going to make that stand in the late first rounds, somebody's going to make that stand in the early second round. I mean, I did it just because I wanted to do it in our mock draft where I took Steph Diggs. I was like, you know what? I want Garrett Wilson. I'm taking him at the top of the second round. Mm-hmm. But is there any sort of like reason where those guys are a little lower for you?
Yes. And I agree with you. It feels dirty to have the second receiver on these two teams be, you know, late second round, say, or, you know, ish, mid to late second round. It doesn't feel great, but I have questions. I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown, you've been on my show enough to know that there's just, he never did anything to me personally. Like, I don't hate him or anything. He didn't sneer at me in a parking lot. Like, I'm sure he's a perfectly nice guy, but I don't think he's an elite player. I know he's produced kind of like an elite player. And I know you spend so much time dissecting the routes and the routes that he runs, where he runs them. He's awesome at it. I can't get mad at you for it, but all right. The Garrett Wilson thing, let me get out of the way because Garrett Wilson is, because I want to ask you a question about St. Brown. Garrett Wilson, this is just an unproven, I think he's great, but it's just like a half a notch worth of being scared, a little bit scared. Aaron Rodgers flaking out, something weird going on. It's a half a notch where I'm like, I feel safer with the other two guys, but I'm not mad at anybody who says Garrett Wilson ahead of those guys. Let me ask you about St. Brown. When I go on my show and I have the gall, the unmitigated balls to compare him to Julian Edelman, do you just want to throw stuff at me?
No, I don't want to throw things at you. You yell at me on your show. I don't yell at you on my show. This is a place of peace and harmony.
It really is.
No, what I'm not going to yell at you about it because, like, from an archetype perspective, that is who he is. He's a slot guy who wins in the short to intermediate area. I think he's more in like the power slot mold. Like, I think he is more of Bud Light Cooper Kupp has been my comparison for him since before he got to the Detroit Lions, before he started playing this role in the NFL. That's been who I've always compared him to. But that, to be fair, was before Cooper Kupp went, you know, we were talking about this on your show, before he went crazy in 21 and 22. That was the Cooper Kupp back then, right? So I think it's in the same ballpark of players. I think from a circumstance perspective, he could have a type of season where he catches a lot of touchdowns and just catches a lot of passes generally. But, you know, Cooper Kupp needed a lot of things to go right for that season to happen for him in 21. And, you know, because St. Brown to this point, as you said, they don't have him run a lot of downfield routes, and when they do, he's not really getting open there, right? That's not where he wins. He wins in the short to intermediate area. So if he's going to be a wide receiver, fantasy wide receiver one, or contend, and some people will make the case that he has wide receiver one overall in his range of outcomes. I think he does, but I think it's like a small sliver chance. And I'm very concerned, Chris, that, okay, if I'm a defense playing the Detroit Lions right now, heading into week one, who am I scared of ripping me 15 to 20 yards downfield? For me, it's nobody.
Right. It's not St. Brown, and it's nobody else either. And that makes the bracket coverage on St. Brown seem all... Now, teams used to bracket coverage Edelman all the time, and it didn't matter. He could get open on his first break. But, you know, Brady was thrown it to him. It's not Brady throwing it to him in Detroit. This is my logic. My logic's, and plus Jameson Williams comes back and suddenly becomes a viable downfield threat. And sure, that's a crutch argument that says that takes a, right, fair. fair. We'll see if Jameis Williams, like, yeah, knucklehead factor. But like, if he were to be the full fruition of what they wanted Jameis Williams to be, like, you could, I'm not going to say that's bad for St. Brown, because you could just easily say that opens things up for St. Brown. But if if a lot of the appeal that you're telling me, say, not that the Royal you are telling me that St. Brown has, is target share, who else is there? Target share. If there's another body who's good, it doesn't seem like a positive development. And granted, we're not positive that Jameis Williams is good. I am taking him like in the 12th round a lot and just stashing him, but whatever. So anyway, this is my logic. This is why I would take the likes of Devontae Smith and T. Higgins before I would take St. Brown. I've been wrong, though. I've been wrong on St. Brown. I've been wrong, loud wrong. The Julian Edelman archetype for me is not a wide receiver one for fantasy. Edelman never was, really. He was always a wide receiver two. We were always really happy in the fourth round. Like, phew, I got the safety of Julian Edelman. All good. This is cool. Maybe he'll get some touchdowns. Like, I feel like the market's too high on St. Brown a little bit.
I am a bit more of a fan of the player than you are with St. Mm-hmm. Brown, but I do share some of the ecosystem concerns, whereas it's a slight degree with the Miami ecosystem, but overall it's like 95% really, really good. There's a 5% thing there where I've got some questions. The Eagles ecosystem, much better. The Bengals ecosystem, much better. And even if these guys are second fiddles, I still take St. Brown over all those guys. So I'm a little different from you there, but yep. I do understand the concerns about, if this receiver archetype that we're talking about is going to have a top five wide receiver season, which if you're taking him in the late first round, you better hope he has that in his range of outcomes. Other things on this team need to go right, and that's where I'm a little concerned. I want to move to some of the running backs here. You have Jahmyr Gibbs and Breece Hall as two guys that you think are ranked a little too high. I think we've had the Breece Hall conversation. I mean, I understand maybe you have some more concerns besides the fact that they signed Dalvin Cook. It sounds like you don't. I want to talk about the Jahmyr Gibbs one because it dovetails perfectly into what we were just talking about with Amon-Ra St. Brown. Jahmyr Gibbs right now is the running back 13 in consensus half PPR rankings, not even PPR rankings. Like, I publish my rankings, right? And I've had people come to me and be like, wow, I was disappointed to see how low you were on Jahmyr Gibbs. And I was like, damn, I thought I was like kind of putting a stand out there by having him at running back 19. Like, you are, I'm trying to looking right now. You mean you've got him as the, you have him at running back 18 in full PPR format, running back 26 in standard, no PPR. So split the difference there from a half PPR standpoint. I thought that was bold enough for guys like you and me, but apparently it's not.
Yes, the Breece Hall thing is really just about the injury, and I'm really surprised if people are still taking him in the fourth round, given that Dalvin Cook is there. And I guess, you know, as of our recording this, coaches just came out and said, we're going to be smart with his knee. Like, okay, I know what that means. So it is totally about the injury. As far as Gibbs goes, once again, it's the poker analogy. This is just not how I play poker. Like, I've just seen this not work for DeAndre Swift. Now, he was a first round pick, so at least Jahmyr Gibbs is going in the third, but I've just seen it where they had a second running back and they didn't particularly want to fit everything all around one guy, and the touchdowns went to the bigger back, and frankly, they had a ridiculous and probably unrepeatable red zone year where they had the most carries of any team from inside the 3 yard line, which, you know, that's random. So that's probably not going to happen again. David Montgomery's frankly better than Jamal Williams, even if he's not great, but he is better than Jamal Williams. Jahmyr Gibbs never had a full-time job that I know of in Alabama. He might be great, but it seems like if you're taking in the middle of the third round, you're really projecting a lead character and understudy type arrangement that nothing about what the Lions did last year and nothing about how I understand these players would indicate it will be the truth. It feels to me very clearly like some kind of leading man, co-billing, co-headlining kind of thing, in which case Jahmyr Gibbs can't be a third round pick.
I'm with you here, man. Again, I've wanted to like Jahmyr Gibbs this year because I think he, and this comes back to what my concern is here, because I think what the Lions targeted him for, and you could piss and moan that they took him too high, right? That they were too aggressive with him. But what they targeted him for was, you bring up the name DeAndre Swift, who we're going to talk about here last before we get out of here. DeAndre Swift, theoretically, right? This good receiver, whatever. And he is a great athlete as a pass catcher. But their problems with him was as like a rhythm route runner, like an option route runner, like finding holes in open space, like as a being more of a true receiver in the CMC type of way as Eckler, a running back, yeah, or even yeah. shoot what Breece Hall was doing. Yeah, yeah. An Eckler guy, but he's not that. He's an athlete who's really good at catching the ball and making plays after the catch, but they want more than that out of their running back position. And I think their targeting of Jahmyr Gibbs, who ran a lot of option routes, ran a lot of choice routes at Alabama, and was really good in that way, I think he's great for that role that they're targeting him for. And again, you can piss and moan about how high they took him. But that's where I start to say, like, the people who will make the counter argument, well, any running back who's been taken in the top 12 has historically finished this. Well, it's like, this is a different situation, dude. They aren't taking this guy to be the guy. Yeah. They're taking him, which again, value, you know, whatever. They're taking him to be like a bit player in this offense in a weird way. And that gets me concerned that I think if he catches 75 passes this year, that's a huge win for what Jahmyr Gibbs projections as a rookie. If he's catching like 90 or 100 balls, and Amon-Ra St. Brown, by the way, is also catching like 90 to 100 balls, this offense is going to be weird to watch this year, because they're not, again, it's just going to be a small ball offense. So I'm with you that I'm concerned about this one.
It just feels like a loss of reason on the market's part. They decide every year. This one's weird though, because usually what the market does is the Myles Gaskin thing. You mentioned Myles Gaskin, or rest in peace, the Alex Collins thing, you know, where they go, okay, a player we've never really seen do it might not be like a world beater as talent wise goes, but who else is there?
Who else? Right? Is
this
there?
Is the, yeah. This is the opposite of that. This is like, okay, there's 700 guys, but I really like that guy. Like okay, you're loud, but I wouldn't take him in the third round. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, Chris, last thing. We mentioned DeAndre Swift. I was stunned to see that you have DeAndre Swift as running back 17 in PPR. And I think this is similar to what we talked to. And by the way, still in a non-PPR standard format, not half PPR, you've got him at running back 25. Mm-hmm. Generally, actually, that's not crazy when you look at industry consensus. He's the 31 ranked running back from an industry consensus standpoint. I get what, and I know, because I know what you're going to say, that this is similar to the Dolphins thing. Like, why doesn't anybody want to make a stand? And I get it, because I actually put DeAndre Swift in my players that I'm worried I'm going to be wrong about, because I've taken none of DeAndre Swift and I have him ranked even lower than industry consensus. And I know I'm an idiot, because listen, he's a talented, explosive player in the best rushing ecosystem in the NFL. If I get this one wrong, I might be majorly wrong. So tell me why I'm wrong here, Chris.
Oh, I don't know if you are, but I know that for the price of a seventh round pick, it's crazy not to take the chance, right? Of course, I see the flaws in the Dolphins running backs. We went through them. I see the flaws in all the Eagles guys. So, you know, it's obvious. Well, first of all, the first two of them are going to get hurt. And, you know, I can't stomach the risk. But I don't think people should let the taste of last year, when people blew first round picks on DeAndre Swift, be a reason not to take him in the seventh, or let's say sixth, to make sure you get him. Like, I'm not pounding the table for him. I don't know. If you got a full 17 game season out of DeAndre Swift in this offense, I have a feeling he's going to outperform ADP. But I also have no idea whether he could stay healthy enough. So this is not me saying anybody who doesn't wind up with DeAndre Swift on a team is making a massive mistake. I'm saying don't take Gibbs in the third round. Don't take Breece Hall in the fourth round. Those seem like massive mistakes to me. The Swift thing isn't a massive mistake. It's much more like, okay, so this is probably the best offense, one of the best offenses in the league, with a great line, a very mobile quarterback, great receivers, a willingness to throw to running backs. Isn't someone going to be good? Does everybody think everyone stinks? Like, there's not a single Eagle running back in the top six rounds of the draft. Seems weird to me, even though when you take them individually, I get the case against, but I would take Swift where he's going in the seventh. I would take Penny. Like, again, there could be double digit touchdowns for the, you know, but there's a 20% chance that he gets double digit touchdowns. It's not high chance, but there's a chance. He makes it through a season, not having to be the guy. He's very impressive when he was out there. It was the last time we saw him before he broke his leg. And he goes like 10th round, 11th round. I think there's an argument to take Kenny Gainwell very late and just see how it works out. Overall, it's an argument that says just because you don't see a clear winner doesn't mean you should stay away from all of them to the extent that the market is.
Take your shots, because the upside is there. That's for sure. Well, the upside is always here with Chris Harris. There was literally nobody I perfectly could have imagined to do the this mock draft stinks and what consensus rankings get wrong episode than Chris Harris. Chris, I appreciate you finally coming on my show, which was on me to finally get you on here. And here we are. This was great. I appreciate you doing it, man.
I appreciate you asking me. I'll do it anytime you like. And I hope everybody has an awesome draft season, Labor Day weekend, whatever day it actually is right now when you're listening. Have fun. Don't stress out too much, right? Like, it's supposed to be fun. We don't really know what's going to happen. Do your best and then try to let go of it. But have fun. And thank you very much, Matt, for having me.
Yes, try to let go of it. That's a good piece of advice. And on that note, there are only 7 days until the start of fantasy season. So make sure you get your league started just join a public league at yahoofantasyfootball.com. Also, there's never been a better or more overwhelming time to be a sports fan. Kendall Baker has you covered with the Yahoo Sports AM, our new daily newsletter that we promise will quiet the noise and deliver everything you need as a sports fan to start your day in a simple, digestible format. Sign up today at yahoosports.com/signup. We, on this podcast, conclude our cram week and our draft season coverage with a very special episode of the pod on Friday. We have Scott Dalton, Andy, Dan Titus, Jorge Martin, Kate Majuk, and I'll be there as well, providing you our last piece of advice before you enter your drafts. If you listen to one podcast, and hopefully, my God, if you're listening to this right now, that means you listen to at least two before your holiday weekend drafts. Make it that one. Until then, we're out.